If you've listened to the show for any length of time, you know that I'm a big fan of connecting with locals when you're traveling someplace. If you're just going to be inside the tour bus, then you might as well stay home. The best parts of travel for me are when you get out into the marketplace or into the cafe where you meet the locals and have a chance to interact. If you're also looking to experience this, then check out Explore Worldwide, whose local tour leaders will get you off the beaten track and into the heart of the adventure, helping you get past being a tourist, experiencing local culture, and finding places you would not find by yourself. And isn't that what travel is all about? If you're thinking about your next adventure, head to exploreworldwide.com to find out more.
Hey, my name's Otis Gray, host of the Daily Book Club, a daily podcast where I read wonderful old books one chapter at a time. Simple as that. Whether you want to get engaged and lost in a fascinating story that has stood the test of time, or just relax to a good book, listen to the Daily Book Club to get wrapped up or unwind during your day. We'll read classic stories like Pride and Prejudice, The Enchanted April, The Wind in the Willows, beautiful stories all told from start to finish. And you can even do a real book club. Tune into the Daily Book Club Discord and discuss the readings with other book club listeners. However you want to listen, it's your choice. Subscribe to the Daily Book Club on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and everywhere else. New episodes every single day. So sit back, relax, and get lost in the Daily Book Club.
Amateur Traveler, episode 801. Today, the Amateur Traveler talks about music and mountains, the Civil War and civil rights, whiskey and the king, as we take a road trip through Tennessee. Welcome, the Amateur Traveler. I'm your host, Chris Christensen. Let's talk about Tennessee. I'd like to welcome back to the show Stephanie Craig from HistoryFangirl.com, who's come to talk to us about road tripping in the state of Tennessee. Stephanie, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a little different than Bulgaria and Serbia, where we've talked about before.
Well, your life is a little different than it was. You were still single last time we talked and didn't have a toddler, so much has changed.
Yeah, a lot is different, and I think... I'm sure a lot of your listeners have turned from international travel to really exploring America or Canada or wherever they happen to be domestically based. And that's something that we did out of necessity, but also we ended up realizing that there was so much more here. And as soon, even when we could start traveling internationally again, we have kept diving into new states and really enjoying America.
It's a pretty cool country.
It is.
I'm a fan of international travel, but I am also a huge fan of taking a road trip in the U.S.
I think it was just because it was the only type of travel I did for so long that I was like, and then I only did Europe and stuff based that you could easily do from based in Europe. So now I'm back and I'm really loving this. And yeah, the first place we went when we came back was a big road trip around the South, and we spent 10 days in Tennessee. And I was like, oh, yeah, I love Tennessee. Like, we used to go here when I was a kid. I love the state of Tennessee. It's really fun. And it was a cool place to introduce my husband to for the first time because he's not from the States. And he had only seen really Oklahoma up to that point. So it was a cool way to start him on a this is how you road trip America path that now he's quite good at 25 states later.
Excellent. Well, and why should someone go to Tennessee?
As far as food, it's one of the best food states. I mean, a lot of states can lay claim to like great food states, mm-hmm. but Tennessee has multiple kinds of cuisine that's really great. So obviously there's barbecue, and Memphis mm-hmm. barbecue is different than Nashville barbecue. And then you have famous food items that kind of fall into those categories, like Nashville hot chicken. But then you also have just traditional Southern cuisine outside of barbecue, which is wonderful. And then a form of cuisine that I didn't know much about until this trip and still am not an expert on, but hadn't really thought of before, and I'm more excited to dive in every time we go back, is Appalachian cuisine. And what you find in Eastern Tennessee is slightly different than what you find in Western Tennessee. And then also whiskey. My husband is a whiskey drinker, and so that was fun. I was doing some whiskey stuff, and there's just a lot there culinarily, and he is a chef, so that was nice for us. Mm-hmm. And then there's a lot of history. There's a lot of good history. There's a lot of dark history. So you can, you know, if you're taking the kids, you can really make it educational. And then there's also just a lot of fun, modern, new stuff to do that wasn't even there, you know, when we were road tripping there as a family 25 years ago, a long time ago. It's not a place, like everyone likes to say, like every state has it all. It doesn't have every type of Americana out there, but it has a lot of different ones, and you can easily spend 10 days to 2 weeks there. And you have Great Smoky Mountains National Park right there for if you do need to find some more stuff to do, you can go off the grid a little bit if you want.
America's most popular national park.
I don't think people realize that. It's partially, it's one of the easiest ones to get to for more Americans.
Oh, absolutely. I didn't say it was also the best national park in America.
But it's really cool. And then also it's free. So, you know, we've done, as part of like road tripping, we've done 16 national parks. But that is the only one where it is free. We went to another free one in South Dakota, but you still have to pay to do this cool specific tour. Whereas you can do like a lot in Great Smoky Mountains National Park without ever having to pay a dollar once you get yourself there.
Very cool. Well, where are we going to start with your itinerary?
So I'm going to tell you guys in order that we did the trip, just for my memory, it's easier. But Tennessee, the geography of Tennessee, it's very flat. It looks literally like a pan that you make Tennessee flapjacks in. And so I'm going to start in Memphis because coming from the west, Memphis is where we cross into first. However, if you're flying in, Nashville has probably got better flight deals, or even some people will fly into Atlanta or Charlotte and rent a car if they can find a cheaper deal there. And then also if you're driving, just get into the state of Tennessee, whichever way is most convenient. And then this itinerary, you can really start it at any point and just keep going and do it more as a loop. So we did it straight, but Tennessee is a really easy state to travel around.
Okay, excellent. What are we going to do in Memphis?
I'm going to start off with maybe my most controversial Tennessee opinion, which is I did not really enjoy Graceland. I think I would have enjoyed Graceland if the tickets were $25 or $35. But do you know how much it is to go to Graceland?
I do not.
Okay, so I hadn't researched this, you know, as a travel professional, blah, blah, blah. I feel like I was like, I am familiar with ticket pricing. So I was like, it's going to be expensive, but whatever. $75 each to go to Graceland.
So you might want to be a fan of Elvis Presley.
Yes. And we got there and I was like, fine, we're going to do it because I can't respectably write about Memphis without having an opinion about it, though that started my opinion out a little bit salty because I've toured a lot of historic homes. There's nothing in Graceland that is so wonderful. I mean, you're truly paying for, I don't know, because I want to say like some of the other historic homes that you can tour in the South, some of them are free and run by the National Park Service. This is obviously not that. But, you know, $20, $30, I think I've seen like a $40 ticket, $75. and then also like, it's a very complicated process to go. And then, yes, you get to see his grave and that's really cool. But there's a better thing to do. So if you...
And we should just point out who we're talking about, because I mentioned it once, but you haven't said it yet at all.
Okay, so Graceland is the home of Elvis Presley. It is a home that he bought when he was younger, and so he really did live there on and off throughout most of his fame. He bought it with some of his earlier money, and it is where his family lived and where they raised his daughter, and it is intact. So you see the rooms really like the famous jungle room, and he is buried there. There's a few graves there. I can't remember exactly who they are, but he's like the one in the center. When you go, it's like almost like Disneyland for Elvis fans, but it just had a feel of like, you know, they're trying to get money from the last maybe decade or two of people who have the emotional connection to that era. food's expensive. Like, we didn't buy any food. We didn't buy any souvenirs because everything, like, it was priced like you were in Orlando. And this is a historic home. It is on the National Register of Historic Places, but, and my son did get, he was two, or he was one at the time, so we didn't pay for a ticket for him. But it might have been the single most overpriced experience I've ever had in travel, and that is saying a lot. But if you really love Elvis, then you will get a lot out of it. I do know a Elvis super fan who loved it. Mm-hmm. And then if you don't want to, there is a way, and I don't remember the day of the week, but there's a way to go early in the morning before they open where they'll let you just go to the gravesite for free.
Oh, interesting.
But you have to do it. You have to go to their website and get the exact information on how to do it. And you don't get to go into the home, but you get to go up to the home because you have to ride a bus to get to the home. I mean, it really is Disneyland. And this is the best way to do it if you want to pay your respects to Elvis, if you really like him, and if you want to see a little bit of it without committing, like, maybe your entire activity budget for the weekend to going to see Graceland. So if you want to start at Graceland, cool. If all of that, you're like, I love Elvis, then do it. But if you're like, Elvis is eh to me, or I like Elvis, but there's other places I've done Elvis tourism that I feel are more in line with my level of fandom.
Where should we go then?
So if you get up and you want to go early to see Elvis for free, do that. Otherwise, if you really want to, maybe make that your first whole day, because it truly is like a full day experience. If not, I would next make sure to get the time of the Peabody Hotel so the Peabody Hotel is this historic hotel downtown. Mm-hmm. And twice a day they march ducks from the roof to the fountain and back. And
the fountain is in the lobby of the hotel.
The lobby.
Inside.
Like, there's a whole ceremony that goes with it.
Yep.
If you're staying at the Peabody, you get to do it for free. I think onlookers don't pay. I can't remember. But if you're traveling with kids, it is a really cool experience. And when I was younger, my brother's friend's dad was one of the people that ran that hotel. So unfortunately, when we were in Memphis this time, we did not get to do it because of COVID. They weren't allowing outsiders to come in. But it is a bucket list Memphis item, especially if you're traveling with family. And the next time I am in Memphis, it is like number one on my list. And they do it twice a day. So you need to know on that day, like, what time you're going to be there. And if you want to do the morning one, I believe it's around 11 a.m., but double check the website.
Okay.
Now, after that, you have a choice if you want to do Beale Street in the morning when it's kind of like party, but not super New Orleans party, mm-hmm. or if you want to save it for the afternoon. If you want to do it in the morning or in the at lunchtime, it's a little more family friendly and really cool. And then, but if you want to do more of like a traditional Beale Street.
We need to explain what Beale Street is.
Okay. Sorry.
That's what I'm here for.
So Beale Street is this historic street in downtown Memphis mm-hmm. that is home of like B.B. King and some of the earliest blues legends recorded mm-hmm. down there. I know I compared it to New Orleans, and I think that is like a short code for people to understand like music and vibrancy and a little bit of a party atmosphere, but it's doing it a little bit short because it is its own amazing historic place that deserves to be mm-hmm. appreciated in its own right. And it's short. As you walk down, you'll see placards for music legends that recorded there and some of the mm-hmm. biggest names in rhythm and blues recorded there. And you'll see these guitars that are decorated that are really cool. And there's some museums on the street, and there's a lot of restaurants. And then during the day, it's more of a tourist attraction. And at night, it's more of a
dining and music.
Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. So, and then also, if you're down there, the Memphis Grizzlies play down there. So if you are a huge NBA fan, like we are, you might want to look and see if the Grizzlies are in town. That's a fun combo to do.
We went to B.B. King's restaurant there, which is very touristy, but they had someone who was a local artist who was singing songs just written about or written in Memphis.
Oh, cool.
He had 200 songs in his playlist. So there's quite a few songs that were written in Memphis or written about Memphis, including ones you wouldn't guess.
So we had a playlist that we had made for Spotify called like our Tennessee Road Trip playlist. Mm-hmm. And it would just keep suggesting new things. You know, when you get to the end of Spotify, it just suggests more and more. If you like music history, you're going to love Memphis. And if you don't, and you go there, you'll probably walk away with some new appreciation for Memphis's role in music history that maybe you didn't even realize was mm-hmm. there. And so, and the nice thing about for us about starting in Memphis as opposed to starting in Nashville, we weren't comparing Memphis to Nashville because we were starting there, which sure. historically is a little bit more of an accurate place to start unless you want to start in like Tupelo, Mississippi, which we ended up, we did go to Mississippi on this trip, but like on the way back to Oklahoma.
Okay. And we've got, by the way, a whole show on Memphis if people want a little more detail, because we're going to need to move along at some point.
Okay, well, so then I'll just mention a couple other things you definitely want to see when you're in Memphis, and then we'll get to the next city. We were trying to make our trip more of a civil rights-centered Black history trip.
Okay.
Every time we saw a place that was an important place in Black history, we would make sure to try to put it on our itinerary. So in Memphis, the National Civil Rights Museum at the Lorraine Motel mm-hmm. is where Martin Luther King Jr. It's a museum now. The motel is where Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated. And the experience is overwhelming, and I'm somebody, I've already been to like mm-hmm. the Birmingham Civil Rights Institute. I would definitely say, if this is something that you're interested in, or if you're taking kids there, this was a very powerful experience. I wouldn't skip it. And then also, I Am a Man Plaza is in the same kind of area, and that is a memorial to the people that were doing the protest that was the reason that Martin Luther King Jr. was in town.
The sanitation strike.
Correct. So, and they explain all of it. I would say that they start with a video. And if you have very young kids, what happened was our son started screaming during the video, unrelated to the content of the video. And there was not really a way to get into the museum without watching the video first. And this is something we've experienced at a couple places. I ended up having to take him out. If you're with very young kids, you might think about the logistics of who's going to go in, but it was a really wonderful, very powerful experience and not to be skipped.
I would go as far as saying for me, and of course I did not try and attend with a toddler, I think it is, if not the best, one of the best history museums of all genres of history in the U.S.
It does a really good job of taking you from the beginning through today, like piece by piece.
Right. It's a fascinating story, and especially for someone like me who actually remembers seeing parts of it on TV. You know, I'm of that age. Also, it is very well told, where you get on the bus with Rosa Parks and you sit at the lunch counter with the people who are doing the protests at the lunch counter protests, and you hear the bus driver yelling at Rosa Parks to give up her seat and things like that. Amazing story, well told, and then in an amazing location, because it is also then, you know, an iconic place because it is where King was shot.
And if for some reason you don't have time to do the full museum, you can still come pay your respects to Dr. King outside at the motel. So you want to at least make your way down there. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a really powerful experience that I think is some, I mean, I would set aside time and I would really think about, like, so you can give yourself time to think about what you're seeing. Mm-hmm.
The second half of the museum, which is more about the assassination itself, which happens in the rooming house across the way, which is where the assassin stayed, I didn't get as much out of that because I didn't think that was as an important part of the story in some ways. I mean, I wanted to hear more about the heroes of the Civil Rights Museum than I did, you know, the assassination per se.
So but when we were there, there was a protester across the street that was like basically protesting the concept of the museum, like, and I don't remember the exact message, but it was, this is a shrine to one person and our struggle is ongoing and ever present.
I feel like they hadn't been inside, but
yeah, or maybe they lived in the neighborhood or something. And like,
yeah,
if you feel like you can't emotionally handle going and just learning the story of the assassination, there's a lot more to the museum than that, and it just still deserves your attention.
And in fact, I think the more interesting part of the museum is the rest of it. Yeah, absolutely. Anything else you want to recommend in Memphis before we take off on what was supposed to be a road trip?
So we spent 2 full days in Memphis, and uh-huh. I would say we packed in a lot. The only thing I would say is the Bass Pro Pyramid
ButcherBox is sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler, and I just got my first ButcherBox. I've got packed with dry ice came 4 packets of ground beef, 3 packets of chicken breasts, 2 steaks, some pork ribs, and some sirloin tips. Now, I've got a great recipe for what to do with the chicken. At least one of those packets of chicken is going to become Greek chicken and rice. And if you go to chris2x.com, I've got a recipe there that's an Instant Pot recipe. But I'm not good with steak, and so I'm going to take advantage of the fact that ButcherBox has recipes on their site at butcherbox.com to learn some great recipes to do with those steaks. You can have ButcherBox deliver meat to your doorstep. Free shipping as always, curated to custom box plans. You can easily find high-quality meat and seafood you can trust. 100% grass beef, free-range organic chicken, pork-raised crate-free, and wild-caught seafood. Humanely raised, no antibiotics or added hormones. I also like the fact that I could recycle all the box and shipping material that they sent. Sign up at butcherbox.com/traveler and get our special deal. ButcherBox is offering our listeners a free for a year offer plus an additional 20% off. Choose salmon, chicken, breast, or steak tips free in every order for a year. Sign up today at butcherbox.com/traveler. If you got recipes for ribs or steaks, send them my way as I send my thanks to ButcherBox.com for sponsoring this episode of Amateur Traveler.
I would skip it.
So very large pyramid originally done as a sports center that is now a Bass Pro sporting goods store.
Yeah. And also the bridge that we came in on with crossing the Mississippi River was like condemned a couple days later for having a giant crack in it. So that whole area where we saw it from, that was a cool view of the pyramid. It's something like the 7th largest pyramid in the world or something crazy.
Yep.
I still think it's worth it to see it from the outside because it's kitschy, but I wouldn't like dedicate time to going into it because it literally is a shop, like a fishing store.
We did another museum there, which I really enjoyed, or at least half of which, the Rock and Soul Museum.
Yeah, we skipped that.
I really enjoyed that, especially if you're interested in the roots of early rock and roll. That first half of the museum, which is about rock, is more about Elvis and the other people who were coming out of the Delta Blues turning into early rock and roll. And there's a lot of music that you can play as you're walking around this museum to hear about this segment of things. I thought it was a very well done museum. It's a Smithsonian affiliated museum. The soul part, I think, would be equally good if you liked soul, and I like it okay, but I don't know it as well. So, you know, for me, the rock part was more interesting. It's sort of two museums in one. And then we also did, and I don't think you can do it right now during COVID, the tour of the Gibson Guitar Factory in town.
I don't think that was even something that was open while we were there, so maybe not.
Yeah, I think that closed with COVID, and I hopefully it will reopen. And then there are two other studio tours that we talked about in the other episode. We did not do either of those, but you know, if you're interested in deep dive into the music, you could spend more than 2 days there even.
So, oh, totally. Yep. So the Sun Studio, we went there, but their tours are like, I think, ages 5 and up. We physically wanted to go see it, but we could not do the tour. Like, it was fun for us, but I wouldn't suggest doing that if you're traveling with young kids. But if you're not traveling with young kids, that tour looked really cool, like enough for me to want to at least go see the building. But I don't have any information about what happens on the other side of the tour wall.
Where are we going to after Memphis?
All right. So Shiloh National Military Park.
Okay.
So the next thing we did was we drove to Nashville, but on the way, we didn't take the most common route to Nashville. Instead, we did 2 things on that driving day, which you could honestly, if you had 2 weeks, you could break each of these up into their own day. But we stopped at Shiloh National Military Park, which is both where the Battle of Shiloh happened. You can learn all about it. We drove.
So this is a Civil War battle for those who are not history buffs.
Yes. Okay. And Shiloh, so it's a Civil War battlefield. It was a Union victory in Western Tennessee. We're still in Western Tennessee. And it happened over the course of a few days, and you can, for free, some military parks charge, but this one does not. It's overseen by the National Park Service. We skipped the visitor center, I think because of COVID. we drove the route, and you can either drive and get out and read the signs and things, or mm-hmm. if you've never been to a former Civil War battlefield, like I've been to Gettysburg and Vicksburg as well, they're kind of all similar in the way that the NPS has interpreted them and the way that they are covered in memorials to different groups that fell and fought in different places. That would probably be the correct military term. We spent an hour driving, and honestly, you could spend, if you're a Civil War history buff, you could spend an entire day or two there. But for us, it was a great way to get in and see a little bit of Civil War history other than what we saw in Nashville without committing like to staying nearby or anything. Mm-hmm. In the same area, you can go down to Lynchburg, which is where Jack Daniels is headquartered. Mm-hmm. We split then, and my husband did a Jack Daniels tour. If you like whiskey, he loved it. I'm not a whiskey person, but we did a lot of whiskey tourism for him because this was his like welcome to American road tripping tour. The tours are a little expensive, and you have to book them on their website. You can't book them through like Viator or something.
Okay.
There's different versions of the tour. And something you need to know, you can't just go to Lynchburg and decide, like, I'm going to go to Lynchburg, Tennessee and have a drink in honor of Jack Daniels, but skip the tour because you probably know this, but it's a dry
county.
Yeah. County. So the only way that you can be drinking Jack Daniels out in is to either do the tour, which includes tastings, or there's a restaurant, and I'm blanking on the name of the restaurant, where they are allowed to serve it as part of one of the tours. So if you go on their website and you're like, I want to do the tour that includes dinner, that takes you to the only restaurant that's allowed to serve it. And it's because it's part of the official experience. He went and did the tour, and I went and explored Lynchburg, which is a really cute town. And if you want to spend more time in the area, I could have easily done a full day just there too, but you got to make choices when you're on a road trip. And there's really cute shopping downtown, like little old stores that are like labeled like hardware store, you know, like, but they're like now like a t-shirt shop, but like, and then also something that we did, my son and I did while we were waiting, was we went and found Jack Daniels' grave. It's not super hard to find, but it's not one of those things that I found advertised on most of the lists of like what to do in Lynchburg. I found it, you know, the American roadside website that lists like every monument. Yep. That's where we found it. I literally was able to like drive the car right up, which was great because it was raining. It was like pouring. And if you loved whiskey, you probably could get away with, though I'm not promising you could get away with, like having a drink of whiskey at the gravesite, like a little one. But you have to make your own risk analysis. But I wasn't going to be doing that. I just wanted to go and see it. I thought it was cool. And it does say, you know, Daniels on it really big, and I'll send you a pic of it, Chris. It was really cool. Like, that was fun. And that was fun for me as somebody who wasn't a whiskey tourist to do. I still thought this town was really fun, even though I don't drink whiskey. And my husband came out of the tour a little bit, I won't say overserved, but a little, he came out of the tour very happy. He felt like he very much got his money's worth and had all of these fun stories about how they make it and through the rocks. And it was a highlight for sure.
Very cool.
So then that night we made our way to Nashville. And like I said, both of those, if you have more time, both of those could be more time. But if you're making choices, we thought doing, you know, morning in Shiloh, afternoon in Lynchburg also was quite nice. The only thing is that you got to book your tour in advance and you cannot be late for your tour. So you have to know when you're going to be there. And I wouldn't wait till the day of to book it because they do sell out.
Okay. And then Nashville. They do some music in Nashville also, as I understand.
they do a little bit. We didn't do as much music tourism, partially because I've done Nashville a lot. Nashville is not a hidden gem of America.
No, and we have another amateur traveler episode just on Nashville. So
there are a lot of Nashville experts. I don't claim to know every in and out of Nashville, but I love it. Like, I wanted to go to Vanderbilt when I was in high school. They didn't give me enough money to make it financially possible to go to Vanderbilt. But I mean, I have loved Nashville for quite some time. And a couple things that we did on this trip that I hadn't done before that I walked away just loving. One is the Loveless Cafe. So the Loveless Cafe is one of those like cute old roadside motel and restaurants that served people road tripping around before even the interstate.
Okay.
So it's on this like little highway, but it is easier to get to if you have a car. And they are very famous. It's a National Historic Site. If I see a restaurant has good food and is also a National Historic Site, I'm probably there. The food was really inexpensive. Nashville's a place where like they take the restaurants really seriously and food can get kind of expensive. And for like $26, both of us had giant plates of some of their most popular dishes. If you eat inside, it's really cute and it definitely gives the feel of what you would be doing if you were road tripping in some magical past that wasn't filled with, you know, all of the reality of the past. But it was really lovely. And if you want to eat outside, which it was COVID, obviously, so that was a big benefit to us. That yard is super cute. And then you get to eat with a view of the motel and the restaurant, which I really enjoyed because you kind of feel like then you're in a park setting. And it was really lovely. They're kind of famous for their breakfast food. Mm-hmm. So they do serve it a little bit later. Their biscuits and jam are very popular too. And I believe you can buy the jam if you're looking for a cool souvenir. Nashville has a lot of museums and other places that feel like museums, like Ryman Auditorium. Mm-hmm. And the Country Music Hall of Fame is there and the Grand Ole Opry. We went down to look at the Opry, but chose not to do any of the tours or the shows. But I got enough of a taste to know, like, next time we go back, I want to do a show.
I think that was one of my regrets from Nashville is that we didn't, well, partially we spent too much time in Memphis. So we truncated our time in Nashville because our trip was half as long as yours. But we didn't plan far enough advance to be able to do some of the music opportunities that you really needed a ticket for. We took in a show, so it was good. But there's so much you could do if you planned a little further ahead.
You could spend a week in Nashville and not leave. Like, honestly, like, right. When we were picking out what we were going to do for our 2 days, it was like, okay, well, here are four museums. Which one are we going to do?
Mm-hmm.
So we ended up having to skip the Frist Art Museum, and we had to skip the Country Music Hall of Fame. But what we did end up doing was the Tennessee State Museum. And part of why we chose that is we made some decisions in Nashville based on things that had happened in Memphis that maybe weren't right for Nashville that I kind of regret. Like, we were kind of scarred from having a toddler screaming in the Civil Rights Museum. So then we went to the Free Museum thinking if we have to leave early, it's not going to be a problem. And the Tennessee State Museum is fantastic and it is free and it was really interesting. It goes through the history of the state of Tennessee. Mm-hmm. It starts in like geologic history and goes through like today. It was really good. But I wish we had also done like the Frist Art Museum or done like the Country Music Hall of Fame, something else too. Mm-hmm. But we were just a little scarred. And then we didn't want to pay for stuff at the Grand Ole Opry because we were like, well, Graceland felt a little overpriced. And I think that was wrong too. But also, I think I want to go back when our family is a little bit older and we can all appreciate some of that stuff more together.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of those places where you could end up in museums the whole time. And I never really suggest people do that. So mm-hmm. in a city where you have like four museums you want to see, maybe pick one or two of the ones that speak the most to you. But they're all first class. And then one place that I think it's kind of overlooked is the park in front of the Capitol. It's one of the most beautiful settings for a state capitol building I've seen. It's this glorious green park. There's like a farmer's market and a memorial, and then you have this just like football field size, maybe even two football fields, like just with the Capitol building like rising up above it. It's gorgeous. And even if you don't spend a lot of time there, at least go walk around there for 20 minutes. We saw it from the car, and then later we walked from our hotel to spend some time down there because it was just inspired us to be down there. And we were also there in May, so it was like a beautiful time to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there's a couple of Black history things that we wanted to include that we either went and drove down, but we wish we would have delved into a little bit deeper. Or unfortunately, one of the things we wanted to do is now closed. And I just want to mention it because I still think it's worth going outside. But the Woolworths Cafe where the sit-ins happened, it had been redone as a place where you could go eat at the counter and have a more experiential history experience. And unfortunately, due to COVID, it was one of the sad things that didn't make it. Just mentioning that because you can still go down and see it from the outside. We did drive by it even though we couldn't eat in it.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ways that we planned what African-American history sites we were going to try to include on our trip was that I bought a copy of the U.S. Civil Rights Trail by Moon, which covered so many, not every place that we went, but so many of the places that we went. And it really pointed us to things we never would have found on our own. And so there were some places in Nashville that are not on the tourist trail. They're not hidden. People there know them, but maybe they don't make like a top 25 list of things to do. And so we were pulling this out and just going to little history markers. And that's part of why we ended up at the Tennessee State Museum, is because we knew some of the exhibits there were going to be good. So the Woolworths is the Woolworth on Fifth, if you're looking for it. Mm-hmm. So when we were using this book, one of the things that we came across was the historic Jefferson Street, which doesn't have a lot of businesses open now, but it has a lot of placards of things that happened in the past.
Okay.
Where you can get out and read the placard and see. And unfortunately, which is true of a lot of places in America, is they built the interstate in a way that kind of destroyed the livelihood of some of the businesses there.
So I'm guessing this was a historic black neighborhood, because that's where they tended to build a lot of the interstates.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So when we were looking for historic districts and other things to do that were part of like important black history in Nashville, because part of why we bought this book to help us with this trip is we didn't want to end up doing only Civil War black history, and we didn't want to end up getting stuck with only things that I already knew about, because I'm not an expert enough in the subject to make all my own decisions. So this guide really helped. And one thing I didn't get to do in Nashville that I really wanted to do was a walking ghost tour. That's something that kind of cropped up in the last few years that I love, that we did end up doing later in Tennessee. But that is another option of something to do there. And then we did end up doing a double-decker bus tour, which I don't normally do, but was really fun in Nashville. It was like an hour. Takes you out to the Parthenon, takes you, you know, by the football stadium.
And you say the Parthenon, we kind of skip over that. The replica, full-size replica of the Parthenon from Athens.
Yeah. Yes, there is a full-size replica. It was built for the centennial. It is a museum you can go into. I think the tickets are like something around $10. It's not crazy expensive to go. I've been in the past and I really like it. And you get the experience of what the Parthenon would have been like, because it is got the big statue and it's colored in more of the way that people think that the Parthenon in Greece would have been colored. But we didn't do that on this trip. We just did the tour that drove by, and that was really fun too. So you have an option of if you want to go or if you want to see it from the top of a bus. And then other can't miss sites in Nashville are Broadway. You want to go into a honky tonk if you can.
Speaking of honky tonks, the one thing I should mention, we talked about this way back on the last episode we did. If you're interested in one particular honky tonk that I have connections to, but we weren't able to go because it was closed the one day we were in Nashville, and that would be the Big Bang Piano Bar. I think it's just the Big Bang Bar now. And the reason I bring that one up is one of the regular performers there is Jeff Smith, and Jeff Smith wrote the theme song for Amateur Traveler.
Oh, that's really cool. One thing I will say if you're road tripping to Nashville is that you really want to pay attention to where your hotel is. So we stayed downtown. It was like one of the only places where I really did look for like a hotel that would comp us, because Nashville hotels can be a little bit pricey if you're downtown. And then you're going to want to look and see if you're traveling on a budget, is there an extra fee for parking at your downtown hotels? Because if you haven't done a lot of road trips to cities, that's a fee that sometimes can sneak up on you. It can add $150 to your trip if you're there for 3 or 4 days. So just something to look out for.
Excellent. Anything else you wanted to mention in Nashville before we push on, ever on?
So when we got there, we parked and we did a lot of walking. There are places you definitely want to drive to, but if you feel like you don't want to be in the car the whole time, it's a nice place to get out and see on foot. There's a lot you can do if you're staying downtown from your hotel, and that was really nice.
Okay. And then you had mentioned the art museum you wanted to get to. I assume that was the Frist Art Museum?
Yeah, it was the Frist.
Got it.
We saw it from the outside. We just didn't get to go in, but I will next time.
Okay. Are we ready to move on from Nashville?
Yes. So I have three more places to talk about. And then there's a few more places that people can visit in Tennessee that are worth it too if you have more time than this. So
the other thing we did just outside of Nashville, and I wasn't sure if you were going to mention it or not, is the opposite of the Black History tour, which is Andrew Jackson's home.
So actually in my Nashville travel tips guide, I did say like it exists and I probably will at some point maybe go depending on how deep into the national parks list I get.
I enjoyed it. I'm not a big Andrew Jackson fan of him as a president or him as a person, you know, slaveholder and a bit of a character,
Trail of Tears,
to say the least.
Doer.
But they did a pretty good job of doing a warts and all portrait of Andrew Jackson. It wasn't St. Andrew sort of thing, but fascinating place to stop.
I will say that I will probably see it eventually. I did make the decision that this is not the history I want to do on this trip.
And I said it wasn't Black history, but of course it is Black history because part of the history that they do talk about at there is the history of the slaves who lived on the plantation.
And I do want to say, like, part of what inspired me to do this as a theme for our trip was having done a similar trip in Birmingham where the tourism board put together the itinerary and realizing how much as a white traveler, I don't even know where to go or what to look for. And so that's why, like, using this U.S. Civil Rights Trail moon guide and also deciding at the beginning that that's what we were looking for was really helpful. Because I think if you just look for, like, a top 10 things to do in a city, you're not going to get some of the stuff that you could get if you knew, if you went and looked for it.
Well, especially as a history buff, I mean, it is, again, a dark portion of U.S. history, at least the things that necessitated the civil rights movement. But on the other hand, I think some of the civil rights movement itself is a inspiring history. And I've done the same thing in Alabama, in Montgomery and, you know, Selma and that kind of area.
Well, and shout out to, this is a strange podcast, but shout out to the Alabama Tourism Board for understanding that that is something that they should be highlighting in a way that is accessible to everyone. And then us being able to take those lessons and go doing them in similar places without a guide or with digital
guides.
Well,
and you and I being two of the whitest people on the planet really are saying that Black history is not just for Black people, that this is American history and this is an important part of American history. Excellent. You skipped Andrew Jackson's home and you went where?
We went to Knoxville, which is not a place that gets put on everybody's Tennessee itinerary, but I really liked it. So basically what we did is we stayed in Knoxville, which is where the University of Tennessee is based. And we did one day in Knoxville and then we did a one day trip to Gatlinburg. But both of those places could be 2 or 3 days in their own right. Gatlinburg is where we visited Great Smoky Mountains National Park from, and that could also be a separate 3 days. Like, you're just at this point just saying, which part of this amazing state with all of this great stuff, like, where is our time going? You could spend a month. There is so much there. It's really incredible. And I didn't realize that. I don't think I appreciated that until this trip when I started digging into, okay, well, how do you only see Knoxville in one day, and how do you only do Gatlinburg in one day?
Well, and if you only do Gatlinburg in one day, you're going to have to choose Great Smoky Mountain National Park or Dollywood.
Exactly.
You can't do both.
We skipped Dollywood, but again, if you had 2 or 3 days there. So she's from Sevierville. Dollywood is in, I'm blanking on the name of the town. It starts with a P.
Pigeon Forge.
Pigeon Forge, yeah. You could easily spend a week there. And then the Pigeon Forge has the Titanic Museum. And I honestly thought, like, I'm not going to a Titanic Museum in Tennessee. I went to the Titanic Museum in Belfast. I kind of regret it. Honestly, like, I heard from somebody else it was really cool and they did a lot of the science and I kind of regret not going. So there is a lot in this area.
It is a very touristed area because you have so many people who are going to the national park that there are now a number of things around it. And then, of course, you're also very close then to Asheville on the other side into Carolina, which we've done another show on. It is absolutely worth the trip as well. So, yeah, quite a lot to do in that eastern portion of Tennessee, as well as a very beautiful national park.
Exactly. Knoxville is not an unknown place. The University of Tennessee is huge, and it is a very famous city. But of the places in Tennessee people go to vacation, it is not as popular as Nashville or Gatlinburg or Memphis. So I felt like we weren't getting off the path. We were having a slightly less overwhelmingly touristic day exploring it. We did do a driving tour. The city has a Black History driving tour that we did do. And there isn't as much there as other cities, but there's more there than you might expect. And there is a giant statue of Alex Haley in Haley Heritage Square because he lived there and Roots is one of the most famous works from that time period. So there's a lot to do there beyond the university. And if you were into university sports, you know, you can always try to find a basketball game or a football game or something going on too. We did enjoy driving around the University mm-hmm. of Tennessee.
Anything else you wanted to suggest in Knoxville?
So in Knoxville, something that we didn't get to do because of COVID, but should be on everybody's list is mm-hmm. World's Fair Park. If you've seen like a stock image of Knoxville, it probably has like a gold dome. And we were able to go right. see it from the outside, but we couldn't go up in it because it was closed for COVID. But that was high on my Tennessee bucket list, and I didn't get to do it. But I know I will be back someday. And then also the downtown area of Knoxville around like the Tennessee Theater. And there's just like some cool restaurants and squares. And it just had a really nice atmosphere of this stuff is here for the students and for the people that live here, and it's not here for the tourists. That was really nice and refreshing after doing a lot of touristy things back to back to back. And then going to Gatlinburg is the opposite okay. of that. In Gatlinburg, we dipped our toe into Great Smoky Mountain National Park on the Roaring Fork Motor Nature Trail, which is like a scenic loop. We did see a black bear
okay.
from the car. I do feel like we got not our money's worth, because again, the park is free. A real experience in that little bit of time.
Then very easy to get your money's worth. Okay.
Yeah. I did a ghost tour in Gatlinburg at night that was really cool. Mm-hmm. If you've never done a ghost tour, these are kind of a newer, I'm sure you have, Chris, but for your audience, these are kind of a newer phenomenon.
I have not.
They're cool. They're cool. Okay. So here's the thing. If you're older than like 30 and you can't really handle going out all night, but you want to do something at night, you don't want to be in bed every night too early, this is a good compromise thing where you're like, I'm doing something that's kind of interesting and like spooky and dark, but it's not gonna leave me so that I can't get up and do my itinerary the next day. So this ghost tour, there's a company that does them in a lot of different cities, and they hire locals to research them. And then there's also independent ones. So wherever you go, I just have started looking up ghost tours wherever I'm going and okay. seeing what's available. The one in Gatlinburg was really cool. So first of all, you're being led by a guy or a woman who's wearing like a black cape and like carrying a lantern, and you meet right before it gets dark. So it is dark by the end of your tour. In a place like Gatlinburg, where there weren't like a lot of well-known ghost stories, they have gone and researched some of the creepier ones to tell you. And you literally walk around and they have their lantern, and you stop and you hear about something crazy and spooky that happened in that building or in that river, or somebody fell off that building. And my husband doesn't love them. These are really more my thing. But if you like Halloween, or if you like, I don't even like scary movies, but they're just a new, interesting way to learn the history of a location. And you end up learning like a lot of like Civil War history, or even earlier, because a lot of the darker things that have happened in a place that are documented tend to be those, as opposed to like something that happened super recently. We visited a cemetery where like Dolly Parton's ancestors were buried. It was just a really cool way to see Gatlinburg from a different angle, but still doing something touristy and fun that felt like vacation.
Okay.
And then something else you want to do in Gatlinburg is you want to eat flapjacks. It's famous okay. in the area. They started doing pancakes for tourists, and they call them flapjacks mostly. And there are a lot of competing pancake houses there. There's one that says they were the oldest. There's one that's in like a magazine. They're all over. They all kind of stop serving by like 4 p.m. So you want to do it earlier. It's not a dinner thing.
Okay.
And then also a lot of them sell like a box lunch you can take with you to the park if you haven't pre-planned oh, okay. a park uh-huh. meal. So that's what we did. We went and got pancakes and then we took sandwiches to the park. And that was really fun. But they're also like, Gatlinburg is a little bit overpriced, and it can feel a little overwhelmingly touristy. Some people have called it like Appalachian Disneyland. It can feel like that, but the pancake houses really aren't overpriced. Like, I would pay the same price for just a breakfast at Denny's or IHOP or my local brunch place. And actually, mm-hmm. your local brunch place is probably twice as much. So that was fun and like a cool way to be doing something that's like a locally known thing to do mm-hmm. without feeling like you're paying an arm and a leg for something. And also, they were really good. And they have some that are made from buckwheat that are more of a traditional Appalachian style flapjack. Or you can get just the same pancakes you expect to get at home. They have lots of different toppings. It's just kind of one of those things that you do when you're there and it's fun. And then later you're like glad that you did it because it's one of the more memorable pancakes you'll have in your life. Even if it's not that different from the pancakes you get at home. Although the buckwheat ones are different. Like that's a cool local thing to do.
Cool. Anything else we want to do in Gatlinburg?
I did not expect to like it as much as I did.
Okay.
Now, what I will say is, for a tour where we were trying to do a lot of civil rights history, it was very jarring to go into a place where you will see the occasional Confederate flag, like, on a dude's truck. And sure. You'll see more of that side of the South than we were seeing in the big cities, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not, I don't want to sugarcoat it that it's like, you know, that it's not the South, because there are definitely Southern elements there that can get right in your face. My husband's from Africa. He really liked it and did not feel uncomfortable during the time that we were there.
Mm-hmm.
Not to speak for him, but just to relay that that was his experience there. And he quite enjoyed it, even though we did see some of that other side of the South that we weren't looking forward to.
Okay.
Just to be perfectly honest about it. We liked it a lot, and we were kind of shocked at how much we liked it and would definitely go back.
What else? What's next?
So that's what we did. A place, if you're doing a loop and you want to add something on your way back to either Memphis or Nashville, is Chattanooga. Unfortunately, we did not get to go, but it is very high on my list of places I would like to visit in the future. And then there's a couple more national park sites. You can always look up on the national park website, you know, mm-hmm. what's in a place and add one or two historic stops.
And I feel like I should say, even though you could probably guess, that we have another episode of Amateur Traveler on Chattanooga and Huntsville and the Tennessee Valley, which is that area. Having wrapped up the itinerary here, you're standing in the prettiest spot in Tennessee. Where are you standing? What are you looking at?
So in my own personal recollection of my time there, I'm looking at the Tennessee State Capitol because it took my breath away in how beautiful of a urban park setting it was. However, I think people would fight me because if I'm going to not say Great Smoky Mountains National Park, like, because that is, I mean, you're just seeing like these beautiful mountain vistas. So if you like urban Nashville, if you want nature in the park.
Okay. Your most interesting moment as a history fan girl?
Shiloh, because so I had already done Gettysburg before, like a while ago, because I lived in Pennsylvania and I had more of an idea of what happened at Gettysburg. And I am a person who I usually take in war history from like a political, like I'm interested in the politics of it. I don't usually like the battle. It was really interesting learning about how that battle unfolded, and the Confederacy thought that they had won it, and then the Union...
Everybody thought that they had won it. And at the end of the first day, they had won it. Yeah.
So it was. I was much more interested in the history of the battle on the ground than I have ever been about a battle before. And so that was an interesting thing to kind of... And then I'm going to tie it with Tennessee State Museum, because I didn't know a lot about, you know, the Tennessee Over Mountain Men and what the state was like before the Civil War. So that was interesting. And also, I didn't know much about what happened on the ground in Nashville and like what it was like for the Southern women to be living in occupied Nashville. Like, we tend to look at Civil War history a lot from what happened in Virginia and Georgia and Pennsylvania and not as much like Tennessee. And then there's so much there that you really can be overwhelmed if, like me, you hadn't really thought about it before.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Down in the Chattanooga area has some very interesting Civil War history as well. That I have not meant to yet either. So,
on this trip, one of the last things we did was Vicksburg. And I felt like I knew a lot about Vicksburg. And then you're on the ground there. You're like, I don't know anything about it. It's like you hear these names and then you're like, oh, actually how that happened is wildly different than what I remembered.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. One thing that makes you laugh and say only in Tennessee.
Moon pies are from Tennessee. And so even though we didn't go to Chattanooga, where they actually are originally from, I've never eaten as many moon pies in my life. And then my dad is notoriously hard to buy for.
Everybody who's listening, we've had listeners who are outside the U.S., and I don't think that moon pies are a worldwide phenomenon yet. So you have to describe a moon pie.
Okay, so a moon pie is like a marshmallow with like a cookie cake covered in chocolate, like a layer of chocolate. To me, they're as ubiquitous as Twinkies. You know, I grew up in a certain time and place, so my apologies if you've never gotten to have the delicacy that is a moon pie. But we bought a box. My son was obsessed with them. And then I bought like a fancy tin to give my dad, because my dad is really hard to shop for. He's never liked anything I've ever gotten him. And he loved this moon pie. It was like 9 moon pies in like a decorative box. It was like the best gift I've ever given him. And it will never be topped. So in our family, at least, moon pies will always be something I think of from this trip.
Funny. And if you had to summarize a Tennessee road trip in just 3 words, what 3 words would you pick?
Music, mountains, and moon pies.
I feel like you thought about that.
I actually didn't, because I've been on the show before. I was like, and we were stuck last night. I was like, I'm not going to go back and listen to the questions. And so I'm glad I didn't either, because I think a lot of my answers were a lot more honest because I didn't prep them. Although it'll be harder for you to edit because of
by the time people hear this, that'll have all happened. That's all the magic that happens in between now and when people listen to it that they don't have to worry about. Stephanie Craig, historyfangirl.com. If we wanted to send people there to your best post on Tennessee, where are we going to send them?
So I have a guide to planning a trip to Nashville and a guide to planning a trip to Gatlinburg. I wrote them right afterwards. These are the best tips. These are the mistakes that we made. These are literally the hotels that we stayed at, in case you want to stay or avoid them, depending on which city we're talking about. So those two are really good.
Excellent. Well, Stephanie, thanks so much for coming back on. And congratulations for all the changes in your life since we talked to you last.
You make travel a little harder, but it's nice other than that.
It does indeed. It does indeed. It gets easier. And thanks for coming on Amateur Traveler and sharing with us your love for Tennessee.
Thank you so much.
Thanks to all of the patrons of the show who help support Amateur Traveler financially. I appreciate their support. And a special thanks to our newest patron, Teresa, and I'm going to botch your last name, Teresa Ribadaneira, who is our latest patron as of just 2 minutes ago when I checked out. So thanks so much. To learn more, go to patreon.com/amateurtraveler. Speaking of patrons, I heard from Randy, who's been a guest on the show and is a patron of the show, about the episode we did on Alaska. And Randy said, I really enjoyed this episode on Alaska in winter. I visited Alaska numerous times and traveled all over the state, but never in winter. I was fortunate to see the Northern Lights on a river trip in southern Alaska in late August. The lights appeared around midnight. We scurried out of our tents and sleeping bags and rode out in the middle of Lake Alsek, floating among the icebergs with the waves of green lights dancing all around us. It was a magical night. Listening to this episode definitely piqued my interest for a winter visit. I'll start practicing my gi and ha. I would also like to second Sherry's recommendation for visiting the Large Animal Research Station, LARS, in Fairbanks. Here you can see musk ox and caribou up close and personal, as well as getting a tour of the facility and their research. LARS is affiliated with the University of Alaska Fairbanks. I always recommend a visit to LARS for people going to Fairbanks. Thanks so much, Randy. Yeah, we've recommended that on the show twice within the last year and a half, I think. So you are not the only one. If you're interested in going to Turkey, we have a couple people who may have to miss the trip because of a daughter's wedding that got scheduled a little too close to the trip. So we'll have to see about that. It's possible that I'll be hurting for people really soon. So if you're interested in going to the trip, I would appreciate it if you'd let us know. With that, we're going to end this episode of Amateur Traveler. If you have a question, send an email to host@amateurtraveler.com, or better yet, leave a comment on this episode at amateurtraveler.com. And thanks so much for listening.